know the play Sweeney Todd, Stephen?
I do. I don't think I've seen it, but I'm familiar.
Attend the tale of Sweeney Todd. His skin's pale and his eye was odd.
Yes.
He shaved the faces of gentlemen who never thereafter were heard of again. He trod a path that few have trod. It's Sweeney Todd, the demon barber of Fleet Street.
Did you write this?
No.
Who did?
Steven Sondheim.
Who is he?
Swing Dog.
I don't think I've seen it either. I've been a theater kid basically my whole life, and I love Sondheim like all good theater kids should. And I don't think I've ever seen the play performed, but I've read it and I've listened to the music a ton.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about this because I know you have that background.
Yep.
Didn't know if you had seen it or been in it or
worked it.
You know, had a tattoo of Sweeney Todd on your calf.
No, I haven't had any like onstage experience with Sweeney Todd at all. And that's weird to me because I've worked on a lot of shows.
Is it maybe like not as popular? I don't know.
I think it's pretty popular, but I gotta say a lot of the places I worked, maybe they were trying to do stuff that was different, or, you know, I worked at certain places for only like a season, so I might have missed their Sweeney Todd era. I don't know. Yeah.
Everyone has a Sweeney Todd era.
I think so, definitely. Although, I gotta say, so I've worked all the way from like high school theater, community theater, regional theater, all the way up to Broadway. And this is a pretty good production for them trying to pass it off as a community theater production. I've seen so much worse community theater than this, and it was pretty good.
Yeah, I'm sure that was a point of conversation in putting this episode together, right? It's like, how good should the play be? And yeah, it's fantastic. I'd like to see more of it.
Like, I see how they kind of like took some of the magic out intentionally, like but we're getting ahead of ourselves.
What are we talking about today?
We're talking about the episode Andy's Play, which is season 7, episode 3, originally airing on October 7th, 2010. And right away, our open is of their viral marketing singing campaign. And the players from Andy's Play come into the office and start doing a number from Sweeney Todd, the musical that Andy is currently performing in or cast in.
Yeah, he just shows up and starts singing and then is joined. We see Dwight holding a knife just in case, I guess, things get a hand.
He was nervous because everyone else took out the prop razor blades. So he was like, I have to take out my knife. Because it looks like everyone else has
knives.
There's
a great Aaron line. He's like, did you write this? He's like, no.
Did you write this?
No.
Who did?
Steven Sondheim.
Who is he?
No idea.
She's so excited, too.
She is.
She's so excited.
I mean, she's still with Gabe, but she's excited.
And Jim is absolutely delighted. He loves when any kind of tomfoolery happens, especially this recent Jim. He's been extra excited when weird things happen in the office, and I love that for Jim.
He's, you know, he's shaking off the mantle of co-manager fully by now.
Yeah, he's really happy when the monotony is broken up with antics like this.
Michael's also excited, but then it takes a turn.
Street! Wow! Oh, that was amazing! That was awesome! I auditioned for this. When did the cast list go up?
Like a month ago?
Really? They didn't call me. Who am I playing?
Oh, this is so sad. The cold open ends with Michael questioning when the cast list went up because he's like, hey, I auditioned for this show. And that line, the like, what's my part? I was like, oh, I'm heartbroken. And he's just left there smiling and everyone else's awkward smile. They don't know what to say. Oh, it hurts. Poor Michael.
And then we get right into the episode. I mean, this is what we call on our podcast a warm open, meaning that we just go from the opening right into the plot. And there's not, I mean, there are, like, I guess there's a B plot and maybe a C plot, but they're all intertwined with the play. They all take place at the play. And I like episodes like this where it's not like two or three different stories that don't really converge. Like the Halperts and Aaron and the play and all of it, it's all kind of mixed in together.
Yeah, because our previous episode, we had all those distinct plots and everyone was pretty separate. And we, like we discussed, they kind of could have been in any episode. But here, this is a very cohesive episode where everyone is kind of involved in the same thing. Did you notice who was missing?
There's no Toby, right?
Where's Toby?
He's out strangling people.
He is. Oh, no,
he's not.
Yes, he is. I mean, it's a play about murder, foreshadowing.
Yeah, there's no Toby and there's no Gabe, really. Gabe is just on the phone.
Yeah, but at least we kind of know where Gabe is. We don't know where Toby is. Out there strangling.
He's hanging out with Gabe.
We start the episode where it's Andy's closing night for the performance, which this bugs me because he's asking everyone in the office to come and see his play on closing night. So if no one was able to come, like there was no other opportunities. I don't know. I would have asked like in the middle of the run or the beginning of the run. Usually these kind of things run for like a few weekends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess it is. It's a little bit of jump in time from the opening, too, because that was like their before their opening night. And we don't know how long it ran, but we skip a little bit of time here. I don't know, maybe a couple weeks.
Exactly. So I guess Andy waited till last minute or was planning on like a big closing thing because there was the party. But whatever his reasons, it turns out that nobody is able to go. Everyone kind of has an excuse, some more legitimate than others. But Andy spends the beginning of the episode trying to corral everyone and get people to agree to come to his show.
That's right. This is where we learned that Gabe isn't going to go because he didn't think anybody else was going. And I don't think they show it, but in my head, I at least have the thought of, well, Andy like told Gabe not to worry about it or like somehow finagle things where Gabe wouldn't go. Maybe I'm reading into it, but Gabe's not there. And that excites him because it means Aaron's going to come and his plan is to have Aaron fall back in love with him because it's really hard to resist someone singing show tunes.
Women cannot resist a man singing show tunes. It's so powerful, even a lot of men can't resist a man singing show tunes.
So, I mean, maybe Andy's right. Because, well, we'll get to that. We'll follow Aaron up later. But so she was excited about going to the show. It turns out the Halperts' excuse was that they can't get a babysitter or their babysitter canceled. And this kind of leads into a major plot point later on in the episode.
Yes. Yeah, there's some interesting things happen with Aaron and the Halperts.
So I do like watching Andy go around the office and convince everybody. And he first goes to Michael and he's asking Michael to come. And Michael's feeling a little bit raw that he wasn't cast in the play. And he was saying that it's too hard for him to go. But then he kind of turns it around and he agrees to go and support his friend. And I really like that for Michael. I like how he puts his own feelings aside in order to go to the play to support Andy.
There's also a great little moment where he says it's too hard to go, but then like he starts to say that's what she said, but then stops.
It would mean so much to me if you came to my show tonight.
I can't, Andy. It's too hard.
That's the second time he stopped himself from a that's what she said. It's almost like a sign of Michael's maturity.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I really like saying that's what she said, so.
He's just having trouble finishing it.
Oh, that's what she said.
We also see Dwight and Angela talking about the evening. Angela wants Dwight to take her to the play, and Dwight just wants to punch the card. He tells the camera that he's not attracted to her anymore, doesn't like her anymore, just contractually obligated. And we see the two of them sort of working from different angles, where Angela then tells the cameras, like, yes, you know, if he happens to have feelings for me again at the end of this, that's permissible under a certain clause. But she is trying to, like, reel Dwight in. And we see later on in the episode, like, she's playing games with him. And I think she plays a pretty strong game with him. But Dwight isn't into this either. He doesn't want to go to the play. He doesn't want to take her. He just wants to punch the punch card and move on.
I like this reveal about Angela's intentions here, because before we just saw them kind of start to move back to each other, and then Dwight got disinterested. They tried to dissolve the contract, as we've seen in other episodes. But this is the first time that we're hearing Angela kind of admit to the camera that she really does want Dwight's affections back.
Should he develop feelings for me? Well, that would be permissible under item 7C clause 2, so I would not object.
This is a start of a whole new dynamic between Dwight and Angela. Now we're seeing Angela as the aggressor, whereas before she was trying to hide everything. And right now she's given up on that and she's putting it all out there.
She certainly is. So we then jump to the evening and they're at the lobby. Michael brings balloons.
You brought balloons to a play?
Which I wanted to see by your count. By my count, it's at least the third time Michael has brought balloons to something.
Oh, I did not count Michael's ballooning of festivities.
He brings them when they visit Meredith in the hospital, which is his fault because he hit her with his car. And he brings them to Cece's birth just a few episodes ago. And there's this time. He celebrates with balloons, apparently. There may be others. If you know of others, let us know. Could be a Dundee in there for you. That's all I'm saying.
The High on Helium Award.
The High on Helium Award. So hit us up on Twitter at @tall_beats.
He mentions the reason for bringing the balloons.
Because I am being the bigger man, and balloons are bigger than flowers.
That's sound logic.
Sure. I think he just likes balloons. We also at this moment learn a little bit about the audition he performed. One of the ushers comes over and she says, hey.
Excuse me, are you the guy that did an entire Law & Order episode for his audition?
Nope.
Oh, our interest is piqued now. Thankfully, we get to see that at the end of the episode because it's fantastic.
Yeah, they really held back on not showing it then. I mean, we don't usually get interjected clips of something that previously happened often in The Office. That's not really their editing language. But we catch Michael's reaction and that he is kind of embarrassed. He makes eye contact with the camera, kind of seeing if they heard or picked up on what was said. And it's kind of like he doesn't want everyone to know this. He's a different Michael. He brings all the balloons and like stuff happens later in the episode. We'll talk about it, but he's not trying deliberately, it seems like, to make it too much about him. He's trying to like push this under the rug that he did this kind of audition. And like you said, I am so thankful that we actually do get to see it at the end of the episode.
Gong gong. I can do a pretty good Law & Order sound. It's better than some of my other sounds and accents.
These are their stories.
This is also in the lobby where we're seeing everyone come in to support Andy, and Jim and Pam are there. They got a babysitter and they're kind of chatting with Andy through the doorway and he's like watching everyone arrive. But to Andy's absolute devastated face when they tell him that it's Erin who agreed to babysit. And so she isn't there. The one person that he was the most excited about having at the show, and she's not there.
Yeah, and it's all over his face. You know, this was his big plan, and he's excited for her because she's been trying to get into babysitting. Apparently that's a tough gig in Scranton.
She's babysitting?
I really wanted to see Andy's play because he's so, so talented. But I've been trying to get in the babysitting game forever. The 13-year-olds in this town have a complete monopoly. It's almost like a babysitter's club.
I understand. This is like a huge opportunity for her.
Yeah, he wishes she was there.
There's much more of a sense of friendship between everybody in these later episodes and the bonding that's there. Like even though it started off with a whole bunch of excuses, which now that I'm thinking about it, all seemed pretty legitimate. But when you look at who is there for Andy, it's everyone except Toby, but like everyone is there and it seems like they're all kind of happy to be there and they're having a good time. This is very different from Pam's art show.
Yes.
Much earlier in the series.
Yeah, it is. And it's definitely part of the shift the show has to do with Michael leaving and like trying out who's going to be in charge. And as I mean, we talked about it in the opening of this season, right? There's more of these other characters, even in the opening song and opening credits. And it's sort of this shift. And I like it because these people have been together for years now. And it's also fun to see them outside of the office. I always like those episodes. And we're going to have more of those as we, you know, head towards the last third of this series. It's a different type of vibe and one that I really enjoy watching.
Yeah, I completely agree, because they're also getting into focusing on different characters, like you said, because Michael's leaving, which I want to bring up and go back a little bit. There was a line that Andy had that revealed a little bit more of his past and his childhood.
My parents used to scramble to find babysitters so they could take my little brother to do stuff. I understand how hard it can be.
Andy's becoming the new, like, sympathetic character that they are giving these little breadcrumbs to the audience to be like, oh, this is why Andy's the way he is, but we're going to kind of find a way for you to like him more.
Yeah.
I hate Andy's past. It hurts me the way Michael's past hurts me, and I think that that's extremely intentional.
Yeah, I mean, because when we first met Andy, he was a kind of a douchebag and had anger issues, and they've really worked to soften him up over the seasons.
And I think that that's what this episode is here for also, because Andy's singing and his a cappella stuff and like all the things that were the annoying Andy things, we're taking Andy's talent now and putting it in the appropriate venue. And there's even a line that Pam says as they're watching the show, like, it's actually really nice hearing Andy sing where he should be singing.
The play is kind of great. I mean, it's fun to hear Andy sing in the appropriate setting.
Which I like that line a lot. It made me laugh.
I think that this is also the steps to likening us to Andy even more and showing, like, he really does have talent. And we knew that. Like, we've seen his guitar playing and we have seen him highlighting his talents before. But this is really, like, a much more legitimate way to showcase his talent and putting him on stage in a production.
Mm-hmm.
So crazy things start happening in the beginning as everyone is filing in to sit down to watch the show. I love the way that they were able to have so many comedic elements during the course of a show where technically everyone's supposed to be quiet. Mm-hmm. And they do it in such a great way. And it starts off with Michael and his balloons, and he's trying to shove them under the seat. And he starts blaming other people for letting him take the balloons in here. Like, what's wrong with them? Why would they let me do this?
This is ridiculous. You think they discourage people from bringing in balloons?
We also see that Stanley brought Cynthia, his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Stanley later sleeps through most of the show. Pretty good.
And he reluctantly gets up for a standing ovation.
Yeah, very begrudgingly.
He's not pleased about having to stand. We also find out that Daryl kind of knows a little bit about theater because Michael's trying to chit-chat with him and Daryl shushes him, telling him that, you know, he needs to listen to the overture.
If we don't listen to the overture, we won't recognize the musical themes when they come back later.
All right, I'm sorry.
It's good to know.
Daryl is the one that discovers that the actor playing, well, I should say the person playing Sweeney Todd, who is the lead in the show, is his plumber. And this is one of the things that kind of sets Michael off, because Andy earlier in the episode described this casting as he was a ringer, he was a professional that was brought in, and don't be sad that you didn't get the lead role because of this reason. And then Michael finding out that he's just a super talented plumber that the director met at karaoke sends Michael into one of those childish spirals that he's known for. And he's kind of sour through most of the production.
Yeah, he is. He doesn't handle that very well at all. He's pretty immature about it, unfortunately. And we also see, I don't know if you caught this, Ryan and Kelly are sitting way up front, and initially Pam and Jim are like up there, but then turns out they stole someone else's seat, so they're sent to the back. But later on, Ryan is asked what time it was, and he has an iPad, and like flips the iPad open, and has just a clock on it, and I don't know why. I guess because he's a hipster.
It's totally because it's an analog clock and it doesn't even have numbers. It just has indices. And that's what he opens up to show Kelly the time when she asks. I totally noticed, and I think it's so funny. And it's just another element in the hipsterization of Ryan.
Ryan. We see also a little bit more of Angela's plan once they're in the theater. So she is like chewing gum, and she very sort of discreetly takes it out of her mouth and puts it on her skirt. And she complains to Dwight.
There's gum on this seat, and now it's on my work skirt. I have to go change.
Too bad I'm not going to explain anything that you miss.
Oh, Dwight, just move.
And then she gets up to leave, and we'll see her again in a few minutes.
During that whole thing, I really love that Dwight was so anti coming to the show, and he's seen very much enjoying it at this moment.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think that that's pretty nice, because I think that that's why Angela was able to get away with this a little bit, because Dwight was so hyper focused on the show and he seemed to really enjoy it.
Oh, yeah. He's like telling the guy next to him, like, I work with him.
Vince Tideway.
I work with that guy. Even now, his name's Andy. It's a terrible salesman.
I am in the dark beside you.
But Dwight's pretty proud of Andy at this moment. I like that.
Yeah, I think he is.
So we come to intermission, where we have a little bit of a break from the camera panning around the audience and catching all of our office members. And the director approaches Michael during intermission and mentions to him again about his audition, that if he keeps trying out, that we'll find a role for you. And I thought that was really nice. It was showing that, like, Michael wasn't totally awful, that they would, like, turn in the other direction and walk away if they saw Michael. But instead, he was encouraging. So that was positive.
Michael. Shelby Thomas Weems, the director.
Hello.
I promise you that if you keep auditioning with a similar gusto, we are going to find a production with a role for Michael Scott.
Okay.
Yes?
Yes.
Good.
Good.
Enjoy the second act.
You enjoy the
Have a refreshment.
Act. Thank you. You too.
Even though Michael is totally embarrassed again, and he's still pretty sour about the whole, like, not getting cast, and then we see him kind of sneakily steal a bottle of wine.
Yeah, which he smuggles back in, and it gets passed around, so he drinks it. Meredith asks for it, but Daryl's in between. And so Daryl drinks from it, Meredith drinks from it, and then Kevin drinks from it.
Michael is not happy about this. He kind of has like a grossed out face.
Oh, yeah. Don't need that.
This is also where Jim and Pam call up Aaron to check on Cece to see that everything's okay. And it goes well. They're very pleased. This seems like one of their fewer nights out that they've had, or at least leaving her maybe with a stranger to Cece.
Yeah, I get the sense it's maybe like the first night they've been out.
No, because a date night.
Oh, yes, that's right. Nice to meet me.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe Pam's mom kept her that time.
We have a amazing Creed closet, totally out of nowhere. Would have never expected this, but we see that the camera catches Creed still lingering out in the lobby, on the phone, dictating a review.
Unfortunately, in this ham-fisted production of Sweeney Todd, the real terror comes from the vocal performances. New paragraph.
He has like a notebook with him where he's taking notes.
He's very articulate and eloquent, and he's on the phone.
It's wild.
It's such a little weird reveal that Creed is also a play critic. He is there at this show, and he's dictating his article for, I think he later mentions, is the Sun newspaper.
Yeah. Be cool, Michael. I saw this guy kill a bunch of people. Good work.
Thank you.
Is that an actual newspaper in Scranton?
Scranton Sun newspaper. Scranton Times Tribune. Looks like it's the morning newspaper there.
Or maybe, I don't know, maybe he's just calling somebody.
Yeah, it's like his blog.
It's not even a real review. I wouldn't put it past Creed for that one.
No.
But he looked very serious.
He did. Very serious. Yeah, that's a great Creed moment.
So before everything starts going horribly, horribly wrong, we have a kind of confessional moment with Andy backstage, where he is checking to see if he got any texts or messages on his phone before he goes out for his scene.
See if I got any last minute break of legs or I still love you type texts.
This is where everything starts going horribly wrong. And I love this part of the episode. It's just from someone who worked in the theater and knows all the things and has watched a thousand different things go wrong. I have sat in on hundreds of productions, backstage mostly. So I've seen everything. And they just condense everything that could possibly go wrong and like give you a little taste of all of it. So the first thing that goes wrong is a phone rings.
That monster of a judge has locked her away.
That's a normal thing to go wrong, even though there are signs everywhere. A phone rings and kind of disrupts the action. The main actor, cleverly, says it's a bird.
There's a little bird fluttering around. I do hope it ceases chirping.
You know, hopefully that would be the move on moment. But the phone keeps ringing, and it turns out it's ringing from Andy's pocket. He can't get it off. He starts trying to cover with all kinds of lines, and he eventually accidentally reveals the end of the play and totally ruins the whole thing.
You know what? Let me just double check, make sure that bird. Okay, good. It's off. I mean, silenced. I silenced it by killing it. I've killed it. I'm a murderer, just like you, Sweeney Todd. See, it all connects.
Yeah, and he has his phone with him because he was, you know, trying to see if Aaron had texted him or emailed him or whatever.
So that's number one that happens, which is really bad because it completely stops the action of the play. Even the main actor who is playing Sweeney Todd just like yells out into the audience, like, shut off your phone, which like takes everybody out of the magic there. Then what happens is the wine bottle falls.
The wig makers of London go to
now that it's empty. And while he's trying to pick it up, like his balloons escape. So the balloons float up into the air. The wine bottle falls into the floor. And not only does it clink, but because theaters are sloped so that everyone has like a better view, it rolls down the slope of the seats and hits all the seats on the way down. And you hear this empty clinking bottle. It couldn't have possibly been worse. And everyone's just waiting for this noise to kind of end and waiting for the bottle to get to the bottom.
It's bad.
Oh, it's real bad. And then, Steven, as you know, the balloons go up into the lights. The lights are super hot. What happens? The balloons pop suddenly and startle everyone. Kelly screams. And then, because the balloons pop, this is like a Rube Goldberg device of everything going horribly wrong in this theater.
It really is.
And then the balloon popping startles the baby that happens to be in the back and starts crying. And Jim and Pam turn around, and it's Aaron holding Cece.
Sounds like Cece.
Okay, I think everybody just needs to relax.
Oh my God, go.
Oh my God.
It is just chaos in this theater all of a sudden, all thanks to Dunder Mifflin.
Like, it's this really funny, tight-fisted chaos because everyone's trying to still be quiet and respectful while everything's happening. So it's like this, like, everyone's just kind of super tense chaos. It's not loud fire drill style opening chaos. This is that awkward, oh God, what else is going to happen? And it's wonderful. I love the way they all play this scene. Jim and Pam end up getting up and going to Cece and leaving the play early. Aaron ends up staying. I guess they make it through the production because when we see in the next scene, Andy and the rest of the cast are taking their bows and the audience is applauding.
Show must go on, as they say.
But I guess our show also must continue to go on because Michael stands up and boos during the applause.
Yeah. Come on, man. And the actor slash Daryl's plumber totally spots him and confronts him about it backstage. He's like, why are you booing? Why'd you boo me? It's pretty rude.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I had no idea. This plumber has pipes.
Good job. Well done.
You're the guy who booed me.
Mm-hmm. No, there are a lot of people booing you. I wasn't one of them.
No, I saw you. And you were the only one.
You didn't have to boo him.
He was getting a lot of applause, and I just didn't think it was indicative of how people were really feeling. That's
how would you like it if we booed you?
Oh, it would never happen.
Boo. Oh. Boo.
I really appreciate the feedback.
Boo.
Did we mention Angela coming back in her sexy gardening clothes?
Dwight asked her why she looks like a Seed model catalog. She's in tight jeans and a tight plaid shirt. Dwight's just checking her out up and down. She knows what she's doing.
These are just my dirty old gardening clothes. They were all that I had in my car.
Let's go.
So after the play lets out, Angela and Dwight are walking back to the car, and I wanted to make sure that we mentioned Angela's costume change. And this very much entices Dwight, and he is he's very excited to get back to the car with Angela. And they're discussing the play. I really like Dwight's line here where he says,
"Well, that singing got in the way of some perfectly good murders."
It's very good. Yeah. And they walk back to her car, and she says, "You know what? I'm tired. I think I'm just going to go ahead and go. Don't worry about tonight. I'll go ahead and punch the card for you." And he's like, "No, no. Like, I mean, he's ready to go." And she reaches in his pocket and takes the hole punch out, which I guess he's just carrying around now, and punches the card and hands it back to him and says, "You know, good night, Dwight." And then she leaves. She leaves him on the hook for wanting more. Her plan is devious, but good.
I wouldn't call it devious. I don't think it's devious. I think it's flirty, and it's, you know, two consenting adults.
Two legally bound consenting adults.
Yeah. Why not be a little flirty? A little hard to
that's
get.
That's allowed under certain clauses.
So we see the ends of the production, the wrap-up party. We have a couple extra interactions. Dwight and Angela head off. We saw that Jim and Pam have headed off with the baby, and Michael goes forward after, you know, getting confronted about booing. Then we see Andy and Aaron together kind of hanging out a little bit, which is a nice thing because this is exactly what Andy had wanted the whole time.
Yeah, they're backstage and then they end up in the theater talking, and he talks about, "Hey, these are the seats you want because you can really hear the sound." And
these would have been your seats. Best seats in the house. A lot of people think it would be the front row. But actually, right here, this is where the speakers converge, and the sound just, like, nails you right here.
This is awesome.
That is 100% true. That is not, like, an Andyism or anything. Those, the idea of house seats, like, where they are, that center kind of area is, like, low to towards the front center. They are the best seats.
Yep.
Legit.
But Aaron doesn't stick around because Gabe calls her and asks that on her way over to his house, could she stop and pick him up some soup? Because, like, you know, you need some soup. And this leaves Andy pretty bummed.
He's pretty sad. And, like, there's also that idea, which I think Michael, when he comes backstage and sees Andy, mentions about, you know, like, post-production blues or something like that. And that's, you know, that's a real thing, too. Again, we get that wonderful, endearing side of Michael where he starts to lead the charge to cheer Andy up.
"Listen to me. Look me in the eye. I thought that you were awesome."
"Stop just saying that."
"I am not just saying that. You can trust that I am telling you the truth. I booed someone tonight. I have no filter. And if I thought you were terrible, I would have booed. And if I thought you had done a better job, I would be saying nicer things right now. But I thought that you were exactly awesome. No better, no worse."
"Thank you. That feels good."
"I did not say that to make you feel good. I just said it. Total integrity."
I mean, like we said earlier, it's Michael being the bigger man, even though he's bummed about the performance. He's excited for his friend. And it is his maturity level, right? Like, they've matured Michael a lot over the seasons, and they have more to go before his exit. And this is a big step in that, I think, especially because his relationship with Andy was strained for a long time, right? I mean, there's a whole phase where Andy's, like, sucking up and following him around and punches the wall. And seeing Michael be able to move past all that and have a friend in Andy is really nice.
And everyone rallies around and they show up and they go there to support Andy, and they all encourage him to, like, sing again. And Daryl gets on the on the piano, and everyone's watching Andy sing, and it's a really nice moment at the end of everyone kind of coming together at the end of this production and supporting Andy, and it's really, really heartwarming. And while he's singing, we have like a little overlay montage of Angela driving home with kind of a smile on her face as she feels like she's very pleased with her baiting of Dwight. And Pam and Jim back at their car, the baby is asleep and they weren't able to get the car seat out of the car without waking up the baby, so they're just enjoying a drink together in the front seat of the car while the baby sleeps. It's really nice seeing like where everybody is, except for Toby.
Except for Toby.
Where's Toby? They didn't want to reveal. They didn't want to show him out strangling.
It's a family show.
Oh, Steven.
At the end of the episode, we get the footage of Michael's audition.
Yes.
And he is playing several characters and sound effects from a Law and Order episode. It is so much fun. Just so much fun.
In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate but equally important groups. The police who investigate the crimes and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories. I'm just a cleaning lady. He wrapped his belt around his own neck. It looks like a classic case of autoerotic asphyxiation. Yeah, it looks like everybody's tightening their belts in this economy. Bum, bum, dum, 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 dum.
The director tries to stop him at one point, and Michael's like, no, I haven't even gotten into this.
Yeah, so we're still in the first act. We got a lot more Law and Order to go. And then it just ends, and that's what we see. But yeah, I'm so pleased we got to see that. It is so funny.
So something we didn't get to, which you promised last week, you had mentioned that this episode had your favorite line.
I said it was a line that we used very often in our household. I don't know if it's my favorite line in the series, but it's one that we use a lot. So do you have a guess?
I have a couple lines that I wrote down that I thought were funny, but I don't know if they would be repeated in a house.
It's not the everyone's tightening their belts in this economy. It's not that one.
That's good. Let's see. I'm going to try and just pick one. And maybe I can just like get a vibe. It's probably not all the singing got in the way of the murders.
Although that is a very good line.
I wonder if it's just the simple part of I have no filter.
It is. It's not that. I actually quoted it earlier. It's off. I mean, silenced. I silenced it by killing it. I've killed it. I'm a murderer. So anytime we go into some place, we need to make sure our phones are on vibrate. That's what Mary and I say to each other.
That's so complicated. I would have never thought that.
I silenced it by killing it. I've killed it. I'm a murderer. It's just so, the way, it's so funny because Andy is spiraling. And so the lines get more and more ridiculous. It cracks me up.
That's awesome. I love that.
Well, next week we're going south of the border.
Yes, next week we will be back talking about the episode Sex Ed. Nice transition.
Thank you.
So thank you for listening, and be sure to go and follow us over on tall_beats, or find us individually at ISMH or at Tiff Arment. Subscribe to become a member of The Incomparable and get fun goodies at the end of the year, access to our members only bonus feed, including bonus episodes of our show and any other show that's on the network. And join us in the conference room, our members only Slack. And so until next time, Steven, remember to always keep a change of sexy farm clothes in your car in case of emergencies.
Gong gong.
I try to say goodbye and I choke. Try to walk away and I stumble. Oh, I try to hide it. It's clear my world crumbles when you are not here. I play it off, but I'm dreaming of you. I keep my cool, but I'm feeding. I try to say goodbye and I choke. Try to walk away and
trouble. Though I'm trying to hide it, it's clear.